Wouldn't it be great if all fathers were just like that? I can tell you they're not, because I'm a father, okay? I don't think I rise to those high standards by any means. In fact, I have created some chaos in my kids' lives. And I will tell you, in all honesty, they have created a tremendous amount of chaos in my life. How many of you would say that as a parent, too? They have... Exactly. It's so emotional and difficult when they move out of the house for about 10 minutes. 15 for some, but we're continuing to look at how to remain unmovable in a very, very chaotic world. And though this is not on the slide, I want you to hear this text from Ephesians chapter 4 in its total. So I'm just going to read it to you. So just listen up. Therefore, Paul says, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Do not give the devil a foothold. Anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their own hands, that they might have something to share with those in need. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building up others according to their need, that it might benefit those who listen. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, with whom we were sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. And he closes the thought with saying simply, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as, by the way, Christ Jesus forgave you. Be kind and compassionate, forgiving one another. One of the things I find interesting when I read the Bible, I don't know if you've discovered this, is just how honest it is. It tells stories I would have never told if I wrote the Bible. Because honestly, they're a little awkward and embarrassing, and the disciples kind of look like total goofs much of the time, which is why I relate to them so well, I think. But the beauty of the Bible actually is that it doesn't hide the story. It gives spiritual advice from Solomon and Jesus and Peter and James and John and all the rest, especially when it comes to interpersonal relationships. I mean, throughout the whole Bible, I'm saying that back then they actually had a hard time getting along with one another too. You read the Bible and you think, man, this was written yesterday for me. For this conversation I just had with my daughter or with my son or with my neighbor or or with whoever, with the person I work with. And I'm not nearly talking about conflict between nations. We hear about that all the time. But conflicts everywhere, even in church fellowship. And it's a problem that transcends everything. You know, it's interesting to me. I can be having a great time in life and some conflict happens and that's all I can think about. How about you? Are you there too? I don't know how many times over the years I have said I would rather be poor and get along with people than be rich and not get along with people. Are any of you with me? I'd rather be poor. And this wall of separation comes between us, and it's just a horrible thing. It's a wall that comes between us and the people that God put in our lives. I came across a story I wanted to share with you. It's about an older rabbi who teaches a younger rabbi about how to deal with stuff. The young rabbi had a serious problem in his new congregation. It seems that during the Friday prayer service, half the congregation stood up for prayers. The other half sat in their seats. The half that were standing yelled at the half that were in the seats. The half in the seats yelled at the half that were standing. So the rabbi thought, if I could just talk to the person that started this synagogue, I could find out the true tradition of the church. And so that person happened to be alive. He was 99 years old in a nursing home. And so he met the old rabbi in the nursing home, and he told him his troubles. And then he said, "Tell me, sir, what was the tradition of the church? Did the congregation, the entire congregation, stand for prayers?" And the old man said, "No." "Did the entire congregation sit for prayers?" And the old rabbi answered, "No." "Well," the young rabbi responded, "we have complete chaos. Half the people standing and shouting, the other half sitting and shouting." And the old man said simply, "And that was the tradition of the synagogue." That was the tradition. You know, it's so funny, but it's so painful. And I don't know about you, I have this notion, naive as it is, that in church people ought to really, 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 really be super nice to each other. Kind of like you all are. Actually, you are. Lots of times, most of the time, you know? It's pretty cool. I've had friends visit here and they say, "Oh, it's about the warmest church I've ever seen, you know? So that's a good thing. But once in a while, things go a little sideways, you know? We get betrayed by a friend, or people go through divorce or whatever. And conflict has the power to make everything seem so big. Most of the time, it can be avoided. Sometimes it cannot be avoided at all. So today I'm going to show you four things that, honestly, if you live these things, you'll probably avoid about 80% of the things that could create conflict in your life. And when you find yourself in conflict, I think you will also have the ability to deal with that conflict. You know, we have this tendency to feed conflict, you know. Here's a little food. Give it a little water, you know. Watch it grow. And conflict can grow and grow and grow until it takes on a life of its own. Have you ever seen that? War of the Roses, you know. And some of us know some real life War of the Roses, and it doesn't have to be that way at all. Now, Paul talks a great deal about church unity. We idolize the early church. We should just be like the early church. Well, we are. We are. And the church in Ephesus is just like every other church that ever existed. They had to learn to get along with one another. That starts when you're about, what, 1.5 years old? I mean, you ever seen a two-year-old swipe a toy from another two-year-old? And the other one's, you know, going to show them. And takes it right back, and we got to get along. So here are four steps to take to build unity in relationships. And the first one is simply, we need to speak the empowering truth. Empowering truth. This is what Paul says in Ephesians 4:25. "Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood," you know, lies, exaggerations, spin. "Put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we're all members of one body." It's interesting, a few verses before that, in verse 15, Paul says we ought to speak the truth in love. Speak it in love. Simple as that, you know. And then in verse 29, he says, "Do not let unwholesome talk come out of your mouth." Sometimes I want to say, but it was humor. It really wasn't unwholesome talk, but if your humor sort of gets there, and sometimes mine has. Yeah, some humor's pretty unwholesome, yeah. I don't tell those kind of jokes. No, but you're right. Don't let any of it come out of your mouth, but only what's as helpful for building up for building others up according to their needs, that it might benefit those who listen to it. King James, it says simply, "Don't let corrupt communication come out of your mouth." We've all heard corrupt communication, haven't we? I mean, it's just the truth. You hear it when you're in first grade. You hear it when you're in eighth grade. You hear it when you're in 80th grade. Is that actually a grade? you hear it. I once talked to a couple, a young married couple, who had not had any marital conflict for the first 2 years of their marriage, and then they had their first big argument. Can you remember your first big argument and what the topic was? And the wife said in the middle of the argument, "I'm sick of you. I am sick of you. I'm sorry I married you. I wish I could go back to when you asked me out, because I would have said no." I would have said no. and this officially, I think, signaled the end of the honeymoon phase of marriage. And the husband was crushed, and he heard her words again and again. "I'm sick of you. I wish I hadn't." Isn't it funny how these things repeat in our mind? They just, you know. And later on, as I was speaking to them, she said, I didn't mean it. It wasn't really true. I spoke without thinking. And that's how it always starts, isn't it? Without thinking. Sometimes we speak too fast, you know. Our mind hasn't had a chance to catch up with our mouth, or the mouth gets ahead of the story. Has that ever happened to you? Amen? Anybody? Never, right? Never. And we don't intend to hurt people, but we do. And as I'm talking to the couple, the wife said, now they're married 4 years, she said, "That was 2 years ago, and he needs to let it go. He needs to let it go." And maybe she has a point. But maybe the other point is we ought to speak words that people don't have to let go of, you know? We ought to speak words that don't require a letting go, that you have to get over, you know? If I say what I want to when I want to say it, I don't know about you, sometimes I say the wrong thing. If I say what I'm thinking at the moment, I'd like to tell them, you know, I can say the wrong thing. You know, if I think it through, chances are better it probably will come out. Which brings us to the next step of avoiding conflict and conflict resolution. And it is simply, I need to deal with my anger. You need to deal with your anger before it takes over your life. You know, anger is like a caution light. If you feel anger boiling up, something isn't right. And you can deal with it or not. Reminded me of a hot date I was on in high school. I was trying to impress this girl. Now, no other guys in this place have ever tried to impress a girl, have you?
No.
I didn't think so. And as I was trying to impress her, we're driving down the road, and there was a little red light that came on in my car. It said hot. It was the heat light. The car was running too hot. And I just remember looking at the girl saying, "You know, it's a pretty nice car." I'm sure that light doesn't mean a thing. And I kept driving, and pretty soon it started to run rougher and rougher and rougher. And finally it died altogether, and I pulled off to the side of the road, and I opened the hood as if that would do any good anyway, only to see that the spark plug wires had completely melted. I burned the engine up. It was a hot date, as you can tell. Holy cow. But if I would have just listened to the light, you know, I could have pulled over and dealt with it. And that's how anger is, you know. If we just listen, maybe it's a symptom of something else. Now, Paul talks a lot about church unity, and the church in Ephesus, they needed to hear it because they struggled too, you know. And so sometimes when you're angry, that's just a warning light. Maybe I better deal with something. If something heats up within you, it's a signal. Something needs to be dealt with. And then he says in verse 26, in your anger, which means you're going to have it, do not sin. I can be angry and not sin. And then he says, do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. So do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. I used to interpret that as I can't sleep. if I'm still angry. And in fact, when Carrie and I were first married, we had some really interesting conversations at 2 and 3 and 4 in the morning. And did you ever have a marital fight at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning? And I realized one day that it didn't seem like anything was ever solved at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. You know what I'm saying? And if I went to bed, everything would look entirely different. That's not what the verse means. It says simply, don't let the sun go down while you're still in. You see the sun going down? I think what Paul is saying, time to get over it. The sun's starting to set, you know. You can just let it fester, or you can deal with it. And sometimes things do just kind of build up. When you're angry, you have a couple options. The first one is maybe you can come to the conclusion that, this isn't really that big of a deal. Have you ever come to that conclusion? Somebody said something that upset me, but they didn't probably mean it that way. It's not really that big of a deal. One day, my wife and I, we were having a discussion. One of those. And in the middle of it, I realized I was wrong. That conclusion usually comes, doesn't it, dear? And I said to her simply, I'm sorry. And I love you. And maybe you've heard me tell this before, but what she heard was, I'm sorry that I love you. And the discussion continued on, you know. And it wasn't what I said, and I was like, why should she be so mad at me for saying I'm sorry and that I love her? Why? And because that's not how she heard it. Two options. We can come to the conclusion, maybe I just need to let it go, you know. That's one option. It's a good option, by the way, you know. Or maybe we can come to the conclusion we just need to deal with it, you know. We just need to deal with it. Just we're going to go talk to the person. Maybe we're going to pull back a bit first, but we're going to have a conversation. Hey, and she finally said, that hurt so bad when you said, I'm sorry that I love you. And I'm like, honey, that isn't really what I was trying to say. And I think, did you get over it, dear? Yes. You know, sometimes situations have to be dealt with and sometimes they don't. But when a situation has to be dealt with, what do? You speak the empowering truth. You don't let your anger go crazy. Deal with it before it takes over your life. That's what I think he is saying. Third thing is, we need to learn to be a giver, not a taker. A giver, not a taker. It is not about taking. Paul said, anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. If you've been stealing, you better stop stealing. Now, I think they probably knew the 10 suggestions, commandments from the Old Testament, right? They probably heard, thou shall not steal, before. You know, I'm sure they did. And so why does Paul have to tell them that? He's talking about anybody who has the attitude, I'm looking out for me. I'm looking out for me. Number one. Above all else, I'm looking out for me. At any cost, it's a theft in a way. You know, people steal all the time at work. Some people build their career with the concept, I will do the least I can do and still draw a paycheck. Have you ever known anyone like that? I remember when I was in college and I worked at the paper mill in Plainwell, Michigan, just north of Kalamazoo, and Lee knows where that comes from because she graduated from the same high school I did. I'm not going to tell you who graduated first. Anyway. But I'm working at the paper mill, and I'm talking to this guy who was a Christian, proclaimed he was a Christian, and he comes in first thing in the morning, and he checks in, and he starts talking to me, and I said, I got work to do. He says, what do you mean? I already did my work for the day. And I said, what is that? All I owe them, he said, is to show up. And that's about all he did. You know, what kind of a witness was that? You know, that's a guy with a bad attitude. That's a me first attitude. You know, I got to say, at some points in marriage, sometimes people say you got to give 51%. Have you ever heard that? Some points, 49%. I got a different take on it. I think at every point of marriage, you need to give 100%. If I'll give 100% to Carrie, she gives 100% to me, we'll probably get along just fine. You know? It's 100%. It's not, I'm looking out for me. Paul is saying, you know, you ought to work hard so you can have something to help others, because it is not about you. It is a shift. And the attitude becomes, what can I give? Do you know it's fun to give? Anybody know that? If you haven't forgiven, or if you haven't gotten there yet, I just say to you, you got work to do, baby. Go give something away today. And in fact, if you are there, go give something away anyway, because it'll be fun. God'll bless you. You get out of life what you put into it, you know. And look what Paul said in his first letter in the New Testament, which was the letter, which is Thessalonians. We know it. In Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians 4:11, he says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. Every introvert in the place says, I am so spiritual. I lead a quiet life. Okay. You should mind your own business. Work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and that you will not be dependent on anyone. I love what Paul says in Galatians 6. It almost seems contradictory. In verse 5, he says each one should carry their own load. We carry our own load. That's in verse 2. And in verse 5, he says we should carry each other's burdens. Each one should carry his own load, and yet we should help each other with their burdens. And it sounds like, wait a minute, what am I doing? Am I helping someone, or am I carrying my load? Should they carry mine? Am I, you know? What he's talking about is kind of simple. You should carry your own Bible, preacher. You don't need a Bible assistant, really. Bible assistant. But if you have 600 Bibles to carry, that's not a load anymore. That's a burden. And other people ought to get together with you and help you carry it. Very simple. It's really simple. We do our best. We help when there's a crisis. Some of that seems natural. But we create conflict when we neglect our own weight. And we create conflict when we're looking at others saying, are they doing as much as I am? Do I really have to help with this project at church? Have to? Do I really get to help with this project at church? After all, so-and-so, they haven't done anything. You know, we need to not be worrying about that. We should carry our own load. What Paul is saying in 1 Thessalonians is simply, mind your own business. You deal with what you got to deal with. You go do it instead of nosing your way into what everybody else is doing. You'll probably get along a little better, you know. What he's saying about stealing is, don't be a taker. Don't be a taker. Instead, be a giver. That ought to be the theme of our life. Be a giver. And if you're a giver, the scales will always be off balance. You'll probably give a little more than... But I got to tell you, I've never seen a single time in my life where I could outgive God, not once. Anything I ever gave, I was so grateful for all the huge blessings God put in my life. Don't be a taker. So you're in the middle of a thing and you're dealing with this person who's a taker, and you want to know, what do I do? Well, here's what you do. You go back to square one. You speak the truth in love. You don't let anger drive you crazy. and you became a giver, not a taker, and you learned that in kindergarten. And the fourth thing he said simply is, make kindness and compassion the word of the day, every day. Kindness. Isn't that a nice word? Say that word with me, would you? Kindness. Doesn't it sound nice? I mean, it's a lot better than fester, isn't it? You know? Kindness. Be kind and compassionate to one another. Chuck Swindoll talks about, radio preacher, talks about going and visiting a guy who was the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and he was amazed when he got in the guy's office and he saw in big, bold letters across the wall, kindness spoken here. Kindness spoken here. Those ought to be the words. And even if a person is wrong, you can be kind and compassionate. Sometimes I say to myself, I appreciate it when people allow me to be wrong. And so because I appreciate that, I'll let them be wrong too. I don't even have to tell them. I don't have to tell my wife if she makes a mistake. She'll figure it out. But actually, she doesn't make mistakes, but she on occasion has needed to tell me. And you know, can I just say in public, she's right? You're right, honey. Whatever it is, you're right. Okay, good. Since we got that taken care of. Okay, you know, nobody really gets away with anything. If you're upset with someone, verse 32, you ought to forgive each other. Why? Just as in Christ, God forgave you. God forgave you. And Paul says, there is no one righteous, none. There is no one righteous. What if you took your life and you drew a circle around yourself and you said, this is going to be a peace zone. Can you do the peace symbol? Peace? Everybody, come on. This is a peace zone. This is it. Some of you are reluctant to do it. Come on. Peace, peace, peace. It won't hurt you. Peace is going to come out here. Because of what Jesus did for me. Simple as that. We all have trouble. I may have shared this story before. I can never remember what I've shared and what I haven't. But there was an old couple married for 60 years. 60 years, I can't even imagine. That is tolerance at its best, I think. And throughout their life, they shared everything. They loved each other deeply. They spoke the truth all the time. There were no secrets, except that she had this little old cigar box, which she had on the shelf in the bedroom. It was her private secret box. And he never looked at it. Well, she was getting sicker and sicker and sicker, and so she only had just another day or two to go, and so he asked her, could I look in the box? Maybe we could talk about it if we need to talk about it. And she finally said, okay, and he opened up the box, and there was $95,000 in cash and two tiny little embroidered dolls. And he said, honey, I don't understand. And she said, well, my grandma told me the day before we got married that if ever he did anything wrong or I was mad at him, I should go and embroider a doll. Just go and embroider a doll. And he's thinking to himself, we've had such a great marriage. There's only two dolls in here. And then he says, what about the $95,000? And she said, well, every time you made me mad over the years, I made a doll and sold it down at the market for $5. You know, I'm sure some of you folks have made dolls. I want to live in peace. Do you want to live in peace? I see it, brother. I see it. Peace. I want to live in peace. And I want you to live in peace. And that means sometimes I'm just going to have to back off a little bit. Let it cool down. Start to work in here as opposed to in here. This is where we react. This is where we think. This is what's called the reptilian part of the brain. It just reacts. But we are more than reptiles, aren't we? You know?